In progress.
Of the term. So we go straight into it. Item one is the draft minutes of the meeting the 18th of January. Are they agreed? Okay, any matters arising?
Yeah. At the last meeting, I just asked a question about the write-downs on the rent arrears, and it wasn't noted on the minutes, or indeed the data hasn't been forwarded.
Apologies for that. We'll get that out to you.
Okay, and we'll note that in the minutes as well. Okay, any other matters arising? Okay, members, with your indulgence, I'm going to skip on to item six, which is the motion in the name of Councillor Gagan, if that's okay. Councillor Gagan, do you want to move your motion?
Thanks very much, Chair, and thanks for letting me back into the Finance SBC, having served the first part of the term here, and I know what great work you've all done, and I'm delighted to be back here proposing my motion. The motion really speaks for itself. I mean, what it's seeking to do is to address the challenges that the restaurant sector is facing at the moment. We know what the government is doing at a national level to support all small businesses that are meeting rising costs, and and that has been done through the increased cost of business grant, where there's a rebate on your commercial rates for the first quarter of this year. And obviously that will benefit the restaurant sector as well as every other sector. But I think, you know, in all of our localities that we currently represent, yes, we're seeing new restaurants open, but we're also seeing a lot of restaurants close, and that's due to a combination of factors, some of which relate to legacy issues relating to the shutdown in COVID and having to meet outstanding debts and revenue debts. And again, the government have acted on that in terms of the changes that they've made for revenue debt warehousing. But others is to do with the increased labour cost. And again, it's welcome that we've increased the minimum wage and this government have done that in the last number of years. But that does obviously impose a cost on employers. And then obviously the cost of the products that they're buying in to serve out has increased quite significantly over the last number of years. And we know with inflation that when costs go up and you may have a suppression in the increase of inflation, it's very hard for the prices then to go back down. So there's a myriad of factors that are impacting the restaurant sector, and the previous government initiated legislation that would allow local authorities to provide a specific scheme where they could designate certain sectors of the economy where they would have to pay less commercial rates than other sectors of the economy. And that's really what this motion is about, because the relevant provisions of that legislation were commenced at the beginning of this year, and in the report that has been provided on foot of this motion from management, we understand that the Department of Housing are now in the process of drafting up regulations that would provide an instruction to this local authority and to all other local authorities as to how this scheme could be adopted. And really what I'm trying to do is get a jump on that, so that when we come to the next budget that we set out for next year, and obviously there'll be a new makeup on the council, that we're ready to support the restaurant sector. And in particular, I'm thinking about the smaller independent restaurant sector, because they're the ones that are really being hit the hardest. And, you know, this motion also calls for things that are outside of our remit in terms of asking the Minister for Finance to separate how you apply VAT, so that you would separate out the restaurant sector from the hospitality sector, and the reduced rate of 9% could be provided. But things that are within our domain or within our purview as a council would be to provide alleviation to the restaurant sector. We know that the restaurant sector contributes over €11 million of commercial rates to Dublin City Council every single year, so we know there's a cost if we do provide that waiver. But I would put forward the argument that that cost could be shouldered by other businesses that aren't facing the same cash flow challenges that the restaurant sector are facing. And I think as it's something that is very acute within Dublin City, and we often give out about what little powers elected members do have. But here's an example of where national government has provided powers to local authorities and to elected members to make decisions when it comes to how rates should be applied, so that they're not just applied on a blanket basis across all sectors, that you can discriminate in respect of certain sectors if the needs arise. And so what this motion is doing in the first instance is asking the Minister to expedite the initiation of the regulations so that the Executive in Dublin City Council have the clear guidance in preparing a scheme. And then what I would hope is that when it comes to the new council, in whatever form it's elected, that we would have a majority on this council that would vote in favour of significantly reducing the commercial rates for the restaurant sector in this city and provide some alleviation. You know, we need to champion the food sector in this city. You know, in countries all across Europe, in France and Italy, they really celebrate with pride their gastronomy sector. And we need to do that too. We need to champion restaurants. You know, they provide a level of social activity and connectivity that simply doesn't exist in our city but for their presence. And we need to support them. They provide a community service. It's important to support independent businesses, and they provide character. And I think this will go in a small way in supporting that. So I propose the motion, and hopefully I might get support of the other members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Councillor. Councillor McCartan.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Councillor Gagan, for proposing that motion. It's very detailed. It's very comprehensive. It makes sense insofar as long as I've been on this council, we have been very critical about the limitation of powers that we have to deal with issues relevant to specific issues like this in our city. It would now appear that we local authorities are being provided, can provide a scheme to deal with individual issues like this. And I'm not going to go on all the detail as recounted there by Councillor Gagan, but the key issue is focusing on a certain sector, the restaurants, and the number of restaurants that have closed, and I've seen them not just within the city, I've seen them right throughout the city itself. But if we can do anything to alleviate the plight that they are in, I think we should be supportive of it. Now, that's not to say also that other restaurants, there are new restaurants and some of them are thriving. But it's in the city's interest that, for all the reasons set out by Councillor Gagan, that we do have for our visitors and for social reasons and for all the people who come into our city, that we don't want to be seen to be discouraging people from entering the restaurant business. It's an extremely difficult business to be in from any contacts I've had with people. And it's rewarding insofar as if it's profitable in the final analysis. But for many people, they don't. The combination of factors that restrict them and ultimately cause them to close. It's very limited what we can do, but I think we can deal with this particular section. And for councillors who complain that we have very limited powers, if we don't do this and we're in a position to do it, well, I think we could be... people could say, well, look, I mean, you have the power to do it. Why don't you do it? So I strongly support this motion. Thank you.
Thanks. Councillor Bourke.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks to Councillor Gagan. And I fully support the principles of the motion. He spelled it out there very comprehensively and very practical, what he's saying in relation to small restaurants and businesses closing throughout the city. Paddy McCartan touched on it there and said if we could look at this and maybe other issues, I agree with him. I would also ask that, and it's right what has been said, that with whoever the new elected members will be, the 63 members that will come back in June, I would also ask that, Chair, while we're looking at the small restaurants, that the small, very small businesses, now they're not in my area, Chairman, but they're right on the border of it, on Fairview, that has had to endure for the last 2 years, hemmed in, Works going on the new bus lane, cycleway, pathways, barriers are in front of the premises, no parking facilities, no proper pedestrian facilities, certainly no movements for wheelchair users. These are very small shops that has had their footfall sliced probably by 90%. One or two of them have closed because they couldn't keep up. And they made the point to me, and I'm speaking to them, that they all pay their rates. And they have been drastically affected as a result of a government initiative of roadworks in relation to cycle lanes and bus lanes and the new greenway along Fairview. And if no member of the committee know what I'm speaking about, I would ask that you take a walk down or try to walk down from North Strand right down to the Malahide Road and just judge for yourselves what I'm talking about. But yeah, I commend the councillor in relation to the motion. Very worthwhile. And I think it's a very good idea to see if we can get through today and then put it through the April City Council. And then hopefully whenever the newly elected members come back, that they can accelerate it further. And it'd be interesting to hear what the manager, Cathy, has to say in relation to the legalities of it. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Christy. Alan?
Look, I'd be very supportive of the motion. We have a hospitality working group in Docklands, and I know from experience talking to those guys that a lot of the small restaurants and cafes, it's notoriously difficult to stay in business, particularly when food and supplies have gone up, the minimum wage has gone up, which is a positive thing, but it does have impacts. And they see the fall. They know that, okay, I'm going to have to put up the products starting next Monday, and they see the drop-off that week in people coming in. And that makes an enormous difference. And a lot of them during the downturn made no money whatsoever. And they were barely able to keep their businesses alive. And not a lot of the businesses, certainly, that I would be aware of in the Docklands closed, and others had to be sold. So certainly anything that would alleviate the pressure on those businesses, I'd be very supportive of.
Great, thanks. Philip?
Thank you, Chair. While being supportive of the motion, I don't think that the challenges that are experienced by the restaurant sector at the moment are either unique or specific to them. A lot of the costs that we're talking about here, which are positive social changes, for example, the auto-enrollment of pensions, the increase in minimum wage, the increase in employers' PRSI, government-driven, and positive increase in insurance, increase in energy, increase in raw materials. And we should indeed be championing hospitality, but we should be championing small business. Whether that small business is in retail, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's in print, or whether it's in any other area, they are all suffering. And I don't agree that they should be that those small businesses should be picking up the tab for the restaurant sector, because I think it's inequitable. So the basis for which there should be a favourable view on rates should, in my mind, be specific around the needs of the industry and not and particular businesses. And I am not, while being supportive for the restaurant sector, I don't see why it's not extended to more small businesses that are experiencing the exact same challenges, because I certainly dispute the fact that they're either unique or specific to the restaurant sector.
Philip, I don't think there's any other members indicating, so manager. Cathy.
Thanks, Chair. Councillor Gagan rightly references in his motion about the examination of Section 15 of that Act, of the Rates and Other Matters Act, and that's ongoing at the minute in terms of the department coming up with draft regulations to be issued maybe over the next 2 months. So I suppose a lot of the questions that we've talked about here about what would be the basis that would be valid to go to council to make one of these schemes, what kind of work would need to be done, what consultation, the value of the waiver, whether it would be done pre or post budget. I suppose the understanding that the financial decision is made at the budget, so it could be a case that a scheme would be made saying whatever was to be agreed. But if it turned out that there was other competing interests at the budget, it's the financial decision at the budget. So all these kind of issues. So we're hoping for a document to issue over the next 6 to 8 weeks. Taking note of Councillor Gagan's interest in this and persistence and a contribution, we will write to say, please hurry up, that we wish to see these and try and accelerate that. But it has started, because when I previously spoke to Councillor Gagan, I think your correspondence probably helped. It hadn't started, but it has now. But I haven't had any formal drafts or anything to share with you. But I suppose that is the question, that it needs to be a valid scheme, and then the feasibility and the impact and the consequences, how long it lasts. Is it for one financial year? Excuse me, is it for two or three or whatever? So all these kind of details have to be thrashed out, and then it would be a decision of the council to make the scheme, and then at budget time as to whether all of it could be adopted and brought into it or not. So it's something probably, it will probably come back to the next SPC and council, as you were asking earlier, as to how it would start to be introduced. Thanks.
Thanks, Councillor Gagan. Do you want to come back in?
Thanks very much, and thanks for the the broad support, generally speaking, for what's in the motion. Thanks to the manager for the response. And I mean, I think Philip makes some valid points in terms of the general cost of business burden for small businesses. I suppose, you know, the purpose of this motion is to deal with the legislation that we have, and the intent of the legislation, I think, is a good one, which is that at certain moments in the life cycle of a particular budget, we as elected members in the local authority could identify a sector that we intend to support because we know that there are challenges that they are specifically facing. I mean, traditionally and historically, commercial rates have been a kind of a blanket application, and you know, there's national reports, Commission of Taxation reports, that propose an awful lot of changes to the commercial rate systems generally, which might be more close to what you're speaking to, Philip, there, I think. But I think when we're given the power to address a scheme, no different than a national government when it comes to how they apply certain rates of VAT in certain sectors versus others for a whole variety of reasons, when we're afforded that latitude as local elected members to identify a sector that is facing challenges, and it's undeniable. I mean, I know it just from meeting restaurant owners and small cafes. I mean, there's a lot of restaurants, to be honest with you, that particularly ones that have been there for years, that are just there for a labour of love. In some respects, they're there because of their loyalty to the staff who've worked for them for years. And, you know, a lot of them are hanging on by a thread, and that's why we see, you know, long-established restaurants that had good customer flow, but making the business work for them is just proving exceptionally challenging at the moment. And obviously, the motion also talks about trying to reduce the VAT rate down to 9% for the restaurant sector, which is something that I certainly advocate for. But I do think that, look, this is an opportunity. We have the legislation. The regulations are coming, as Cathy says. And so I just ask that my motion be adopted, and then it would obviously be passed on to the relevant ministers if the motion was to be adopted. And thanks, everyone, for all of your contributions.
Thanks. Is the motion agreed? Agreed. Oh, okay. Eric?
How you separate one from the other, by the way, the restaurants that are doing very well, right in the heartland of hearing at the moment, you can't get a meal for love nor money in some of these restaurants. They're so busy. The same out in Holt, the area I live in, Malahide. How do you differentiate between them and the smaller place, the smaller people that the councillor has just been describing? That's going to be a bit of a job. And I take up this colleague's point, by the way. We pay rates. I can make a sterling case as to why we shouldn't. I've done it several times here and elsewhere. It makes no damn difference. I'm the same as everybody else. One size fits all. So I think if we're going to form a queue, I'd like to join it. But especially taking one sector like this and giving them the hoosh by saying that we've proved that here, I think it wouldn't be accurate. I don't think a lot of people on reflection would have to think about that.
Okay, thanks, Eric. I think before Anton has agreed, he'll come back to us anyway from our discussion. So, but your point is well made anyway. So, okay, the motion is agreed. Okay, just before we move on, members, this is Fintan Moran's last day in Dublin City Council. So I, on a personal level, on behalf of the SPCA, I want to, first of all, thank Fintan. I want to wish him well in his retirement. Fintan has done a huge amount of work over many years in a lot of different parts of the finance section, particularly around rates. But I suppose as councillors, how we best know Fintan is around budget and budgets, and particularly around budget consultative groups and a lot of the work that goes into preparing budgets. I've noticed that in the last, particularly the last 10 years, he's been heavily involved in preparing budgets and probably beyond that. And his attention to detail in replying to councillors' queries when we're trying to get into the nitty-gritty of budgets has been exceptional. And I've always found it very helpful. I know other councillors have as well. So just on my behalf and behalf of the whole of the SPCA, I just want to thank Fintan and wish him well in his retirement. Councillor Bourke.
Yeah, just very briefly, Chair, just to associate myself with your kind words towards Fintan. And I can remember going back the years, he was always an open door whenever we needed to ask questions in relation to the complicated, the comprehensive budget documentation. You'd need a degree in mathematics, well, at least I would, but he was always very helpful. And I want to thank Fintan and the team that was with him, and of course, Cathy Quinn, that whole section that does tremendous work. But today, this evening, it's about Fintan, and I wish you well, Fintan, wherever the next chapter of your journey is going to be. So good to be my good, Fintan.
Thanks, Christy. Councillor McCartan.
I'd like to associate myself with the tributes to Fintan. He's always there sitting behind Cathy. He's unflappable. He seems to always have the answer to any complicated questions I've had over the years. And I'd have to make the point then, it's not just some councillors who are retiring. Obviously, some members of the executive as well are leaving. So there'll be a void there, probably a greater void on the executive side than on the councillor side for the loss of Fintan. But I wish you well, Fintan, in whatever avenue you're going down next. Thank you.
Thanks, Paddy. Councillor Gagan.
Thanks very much, Chair. And look, really just to share with what Councillor McCartan has just said there, just to congratulate you, first of all, on your retirement. But in my dealings with you, which has always just been about the money and where is the money and what are the collection rates and... particularly during COVID when you guys had to administer a scheme and it was effectively shunted onto you with no real direction from the department, and then you had to chase the money back from the department to actually put it all together. I mean, I think really it was remarkable what you guys did during COVID and getting money back out to businesses. I genuinely mean that. I think you never get, you're always getting attacked on arrears, which isn't even your job when it comes to rent arrears. But you get very little credit for how unbelievably successful Dublin City Council is in collecting commercial rates, and always has been. And that clearly hasn't happened by accident. It's clearly because of the skilled staff that are in your department. And just to wish you and your family a really happy retirement.
Thanks, James. Cathy, do you want to come in?
You're very kind. Seamus, thanks very much, Chair. I'd just like to echo all the points that you made. There's probably no words to fully describe Fintan except to say he's been an absolute rock and resource and such a terrific colleague, and I think all staff from Dublin City Council here today would reflect that. There's never been a question too hard for him to chase down and to get exactly right. We would never have gone back with poor information, and that's the kind of standard that Fintan always set for himself. He's given terrific service to DCC, but listen, this is a new chapter for him. He's gone off to do whatever he wants to do with his time, and good for him, and we just wish him all the best and are very grateful to have worked with him.
Councillor Lacey.
Look, I won't repeat what I presume people have said, but first of all, apologies for being late. There was some Lewis blockage. I don't know what the problem was. But just to say, Fintan has always been a wonderful contact point, a wonderful servant of the city. And I'd like to echo what I'm presuming everybody else has already said, and to wish you all the very best for the future.
Thanks, Chair. Fintan.
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and thanks, members, and thanks, Cathy, for the very, very kind comments I suppose I've served as the management accountant for 22 years in the council. I've worked with five different councils. And it's been a real privilege and honour to have served the city and the councillors. And I really appreciate the support I've got over the years. And thank you very much for your kind comments. It's much appreciated. Thank you. And I wish you the best going forward.
Hey, thanks, Finda. We'll move on, members. Item two is report on the community well building in Dublin City, the values-based recruitment, and we have Dipna Farrell here to make a presentation and answer questions. I'll hand over to Dipna.
Everybody got the report. If you have any questions, I'm very happy to answer them. I suppose we're embarking on this journey over a number of months, and I'm part of the working group, and I suppose my remit is for specifically recruitment and the targeted recruitment that we have undertaken over the last couple of years. And the report outlines our progress to date and where we currently are, and our current targeted recruitment is in the Ballyfermot and Cherry Orchard area, which has been a huge success in terms of the number of applications that we've received. So we're going through that process at the moment. It's only at assessment stage, and we will be carrying out interviews very shortly. So it's been successful to date, and we've had a lot of good feedback on it. And we've had your support as well, which is very welcome. So we hope to continue that, because it has been a success. But if there are, and we also have our secondly on the report there, the targeted traineeship program, which, although it brings in small numbers, it's been a success as well. And we've had two very successful initiatives there with the training centre in Ballyfermot as well. So we're going to continue on that journey as also. And we hope to look at other initiatives that can help and come under the community wealth building umbrella. If you have any questions, I'm very happy to answer them.
Councillor Conaghan.
Thanks, Chair, and thank them for the report there. Just I noticed that the Ballymun pilot that happened a couple of years ago at this stage was very successful. I know a couple of people who got employed through it. I'm just wondering, I know I've said this on a couple of times in different forums, just if we could replicate that in the Finglas area. I was at the Pubble launch of the deprivation index there in November, I think it was, and we've one of the most, according to the index, deprived areas in the country. So I'm just wondering if we could do that, because there's a lot of projects about to happen in the area. We have the Jamestown Master Plan, which hopefully we'll see up towards, I think, 3,000 to 4,000 housing units. We've numerous building projects, PPP projects, and then we have the Lewis going through. So just see it as a good opportunity maybe to expand on this scheme. So hopefully it'll point it towards Finglas after Cherry Orchard. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Anthony. Dimta.
Yeah, we can certainly put it down for consideration. At the moment, we have a significant number of applications through the Ballyfermot initiative in Cherry Orchard, so we have to be mindful of the vacancies. But in future, we can. We're trying to spread it out across the various different areas, so we can certainly include Finglas in our considerations for any further targeted recruitment campaigns. Absolutely.
Thanks, Tim. I know I spoke to you before about my own area, about Cabaret. I suppose everyone will want this rolled out in their own area. Is it possible, say, when we're recruiting in general and general apply, I know there's a recruitment campaign coming up, is it possible to use an initiative like this where we target specific areas rather than the individual programmes under the scheme? When we are doing general recruitment, that we would target certain areas for all the reasons that I've outlined, and particularly probably focusing on the immediate one coming up.
Are you referring specifically to general operatives? Yeah, as I say, we have a huge number of applications at the moment that we have to assess and go through the process. So it will be dependent on the vacancies that are available after that. But yeah, we certainly, it's something that we hope to continue, because it's proved very successful and we have got a lot of positive feedback. And we will be assessing how people go through their careers and if the retention and all of that. So we're looking at that as well to see how successful it has been on the ground for the people who have actually taken part in it.
Okay, I don't see any more questions. Thanks for that, Damon. Eric Sherry.
Yeah, just to say, we're very supportive of this, as I said in the very early days. But we should make constant reference to the fact that it's not just about giving a shoe up, and it's very important to do that, because the people we're targeting really they need a leg up somewhere along the line, because they just have had their problems. And I've seen the success in some cases. But we should be emphasising that the jobs we're after at the end of the day are quality, not Rolls Royce jobs, but jobs that give people their proper rights, give them an opportunity to have a pension at some time, sick pay scheme, etc. In other words, that you're just not taken onto the payroll and paid some nefarious wage that doesn't refer to the actual wage for the industry that they're going into.
Yes, all the general operatives that we take on would be, and the salary scales that apply to general operatives across the sector.
Okay, thanks very much, Dimple. We'll move on, members. Item four, correspondence. For noting, just one further bit of correspondence just came in this morning. It was just a reply from the Minister in Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage, just around the visitor accommodation charge. Just the Minister just acknowledges the reply, and just, he was unable to meet us at this time, but has sought a proposal from Dublin City Council just for further consideration. So I know we've discussed this many times, and it's probably not universally supported, so I'm proposing we leave this until the new council and let the new finance SBC take this up, if members are agreeable on that. Okay. Any, Councillor McCartan?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt that the amount of correspondence on this particular issue back and forth, and it leaves a lot to be desired, because the enthusiasm, as far as I'm aware, Chair, this committee are in favour of a visitor tax. There's been certain exceptions, but I think generally across party there was a view in favour of it. So it'll be up to the new council to decide that, but I think in relation to our last issue and the issue we the motion that was passed in Councillor Gagan's name there now, if we are given extra powers to deal with issues like this, that it's quite obvious to us, it's quite obvious to me, that the very limited amount accruing to the council, to the 12 million, I think was the figure, it should be pursued. But that's for the future, and I suppose that's up to the next elected members. But I would hope there would be continuity here from those councillors who will be re-elected and will sit on this committee.
Yeah, agreed, Councillor. Councillor Lacey?
Yeah, I mean, I've made it clear always that I support hotel bed tax, but much more broadly, I support the reform of the financing of local government. I doubt if there's anybody, including our esteemed City Treasurer and the Secretary General of the Departments of Finance and Local Government, that actually understands how local government is really financed. There's a bit from here, a bit from there. We get a bit of a grant and we hope for the best. And, you know, the irony of us that, you know, we're abolished in November if we don't adopt the budgets, even though the department only gives us the figures that we include in the budgets in about March or so. So what I'd far prefer to see, I think we should continue to push this, but I think we need to push the broader financing issue. And, I mean, there's people from four, I think, parties here, three or whatever, looking around the room here, who will all contest the next local elections in June and will contest the general election in whenever the general election is held. And I'd love to see all the parties having a commitment to reforming the financing of local government as both a local government agenda item in their manifestos, but more importantly, as it being included in their national election manifestos. And I would propose, without proposing any specific issue, because I think that has to be up to the parties, that we might write to the general secretaries of all the parties represented on the council and saying that this committee would recommend that you would include reforming the financing of local government in your election manifestos.
Okay, is that agreed? Okay, agreed. Okay, all the other correspondence noted. Okay, item five is a presentation to summary of the works of the SBC 2019-2024. Cathy?
Yeah,
Apologies, we'll just bring that up and we'll click through. So we thought it would be useful to, I suppose, just go over some of the issues that have taken the debate and discussion here over the period from 2019. It seems hard to think back to 2019 pre-COVID when none of us knew what was coming down. So this is just to... So there's a table of contents there. We move on. And we just picked out the key things that we spent so much money on, or so much time on. So reflecting what Councillor Lacey was saying there, you'll just see some points as to some of the issues we looked at with local government funding. So we engaged Grant Thornton to look at local government funding as it applies to DCC as opposed to more generally. We set up a subcommittee and met with local elected members from other local authorities and also TDs, senators and so on. There was a review of the baseline funding from the department, which we made a submission through, taking into account aspects that we learned from our engagement with those other members. A key issue that was reflected here was around what about those all new builds that was out of scope of the LPT, and they were brought through. But I think at the end of this period, despite all of that work, there would be a sense that it's a key area for change, probably for the next SPC. In terms of that, both the LPT and local government funding. If you can move on. Yeah, thanks. So in terms of rates collection, you know, if you can think back to 2019 had been the best year at that time. 2020, in terms of collection, 2020 just was a whole different ballgame. In some ways, that was great because we were going in really well. It wasn't that we were trying to pick up a lot of pieces. There was a lot of support from the government in terms of payments, which I'll come to. In 2023, we've got back to pre-COVID levels. Our collection for 2023 is at 93%, and you'll see that arrears are at 28.5 on a much bigger debit than the amount in 2019. And all the core processes and all of that are back working, so that function has restored. Just moving on again, thanks. So an issue that this committee has given a lot of attention to, and probably in particular the first item around looking to secure the capacity to have a direct deduction from source for social housing tenants that are in receipt of a social welfare payment. So that's provided through an existing 2014 Act, but that's not the case. That figure there for 2023 for rents isn't correct. That should be 72% or 73%, not 93%. So in terms of rates, rents arrears, they've reduced from last year. It was at 37, and you'll see at the end of 2023 they're at 36, and that's a good thing in itself. The court process was very difficult for housing rents over the COVID period because it just was very difficult in terms of options that were being available to them. There's more focus now on those accounts with high incomes and high arrears, which, you know, don't correlate well together. And there's been different changes in the actions of the unit itself in terms of cyclical review of each rent account. And you remember that recently, I think it was the last meeting, Clive and Tara and Michelle came in and gave a very comprehensive report on the actions that have been taken there. So while the reduction in arrears of 1 million is a lot, it's a million, and you might think, oh, it's not an awful lot on that value, it is a good sign in terms of shifting that trend, so that's hopeful. So just moving on to the next slide, thanks. So this is reflecting what we've been talked about, a lot of work gone into the hotel bed tax, and I think, you know, the detail that we took in around, you know, that it's not simply looking for money for the dumps for city council to spend on whatever. It's reflecting that if tourists want to come here, it's because there's a good quality of life and it's an attractive place. If it's attractive for tourists, it's attractive for visitors. It supports both. And really, at this stage, a hotel bed tax is more common than not in many places. And to look and see what could be done to benefit people who live here and people who visit. There is a lot going on with this, you know, in Wales and Scotland, Edinburgh in particular. There's a lot of developments on the introduction of an accommodation tax, and I think that will continue. They seem to be quite close to us. They've gone through a public consultation in Wales and also in Edinburgh. So reflecting what the Chair said earlier about the request from the Minister to have a bigger input in terms of a submission that would probably feed into that for the next SPC. Just going on again. Thanks, Oi. I suppose this SPC have put a lot of thought and reflects Dimna's report, you know, which is a new approach for us in terms of our recruitment, and it goes back to the principles of community wellbeing. But community wellbeing is looking at a lot of aspects of what we do and seeing how we can make changes that can assist people who maybe don't have a lot of chances to get into employment and have access to life supports that can make so much difference, whether that be good wages or pensions and so on. So we're doing a lot of work with Cherry Orchard. There's an LAP group that we're looking at seeing how community wealth building can benefit Cherry Orchard. The social value framework was adopted, and that's assisting us on the procurement side, and then the recruitment policy. And another piece that you will have seen in the report on the recruitment is looking to lobby some of these nationally set targets that around educational attainment, and just can make it very difficult for people who don't have that benefit to get into certain streams. So like the GOs is something that we can set ourselves, but many of the office-based working requires a leaving cert, which can be an obstacle, and there has to be ways around that. So it's just to try and lobby around that. So that's the next piece of that. Another area that we put a lot of work on is around this the issue of civic crowdfunding. We looked at it as a concept in June 2020. We did a good bit of time in market dialogue because there hasn't a provider here, and our entry into this has been the first in local government. There were operators in other jurisdictions. So Crowdfund Dublin City launched in October 2023. We've had lots of workshops and the rest. We've had first funding window, which closed recently, and we'll make arrangements for the second funding window commence. So that's been a big change for local groups to get their head around what they need to do for this to get that funds, in terms of getting their pitch out to the wider community and then in getting the contribution from ourselves. So it's looking at getting support but from a different angle, and there's just a bit of a process in that, but we're working away on that. Thanks as always. So in terms of change, these are some formal things that would have come through, and it reflects what we spoke of, some of what we spoke with Councillor Gagan earlier. So the Section 15, the Rates Alleviation Scheme, that'll come through shortly. We'll see what the description of it is and how we work with that. And, the second bit around the maximum percentage, all of that kind of stuff, we'll have a look at. You know, there were lots of changes. You know, before COVID, the idea that the government would have paid ratepayers for their rates would have seemed crazy, but that's what was needed at the time. That was it. So I suppose the figures there just reflected the volume of what was processed. It's worth noting that as a percentage was probably less in Dublin City Council than in other local authorities, because a lot of big companies were seen to be capable of continuing themselves, and they weren't included in that. There was, you're probably forgetting all these terms, the restart grant, the restart plus grant, that they came through, and then there was all kind of top-ups, if you remember, when there was different local authorities with lockdowns in those local authorities. There was the small business assistance scheme. So there were an awful lot of changes that we just had to adapt to and get on with over that period, which we did, and get that money out to businesses. Thanks, Zoe. One of the issues we looked at coming out from the review of local government funding by Grant Thornton was, if we don't keep up with inflation, we're essentially allowing our capacity to fund what we're doing just slip away, and we should look at a charging policy. And we gave a three-tiered one around, you know, matching or even going beyond inflation, which we thought was appropriate maybe for things like car parking, where we're trying to influence how people use it, reduced it for other things, which might be like things to do with parks or a sports centre, and just have it match inflation. So that went to council and was adopted. Thanks, Zoe. Another issue that we looked at as well, which still requires a lot of attention, is just the whole idea that there's lots of funding, as was mentioned by Councillor Burke earlier, around the construction of roads projects. But the maintenance of those roads aren't, the funding is inadequate. And in terms of the funding that comes through, it would only fund 1% of that. So there is a concern that the network's growing wider all the time. And because the usage is now becoming more dominated by pedestrians and cyclists, which is great, there's a higher standard of fit for purpose of a road surface for it to use by pedestrian or cyclist than by a car, because obviously the impacts would be different. So this is a concern, and it's not corrected, and it's something that we need to be pushing again. Thanks very much. One discussion coming from, I think it was when the Commission of Taxation and Welfare report came through, there was a comment in that about the introduction of congestion charging. And members may remember that we met with the Traffic and Transport SPC, really on the concerns that from the experience of this committee with the LPT, there was concern that it would go to some national pot rather than coming into ourselves if it is introduced. The preference at the end of all that was to wait until a new council is formed and look at it again in light of how the government is positioning itself. Thanks. And then just some of the different presentations made to the SBC, you'll see them there. There's a very lively presentation from Deirdre Scully on the pre-draft consultation of the city development plan. You might remember the Fáilte Ireland came in and spoke to us, and that was very interesting about tourism spend and in particular the whole concept of maritime tourism, what could be done. You might remember our discussions on the Ballymun Social Regeneration Fund. So they're just samples of what we've looked at over that time. That's it, I think. Yeah, so that's just a summary, Chair, of some of the issues that we've looked at. Some you might think are ticked off, but others are probably longer term. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Cathy. Councillor McCartan.
Thanks very much, Cathy, for that summary. It does show the amount of work that has been done by this SPC in the last 5 years, which I think has been very comprehensive in certain ways, frustrating in other ways. Going back, and I'm reminded about the LPT going on about that for years, about the new bills and that they were finally brought in. I remember in Lansdowne Place where apartments were selling for $6.5 million and they weren't paying any local property tax. At least they've been brought in now. But the vexed question then about the distribution of this tax still remains, and it is, the longer it goes on, the current makeup of the tax seems to me to be not fit for purpose, and I think it will need to be addressed in the context of probably a national election, and it was brought in on the back of an envelope at the behest of the Troika. It goes back that far, and there's been no significant benefit to the city for that. On the rates, yeah, that's a very positive story given our dependence on rates, 93% compliance and the government stepping in during COVID. On the rent arrears, which were 19 million in 2009, now they've peaked and they're reducing, but still it's still at a very high level. And just, Cathy, I might ask you that the legislation necessary to make deductions then from social welfare, what is the update on that? In terms of, we've discussed the visitor tax, I would, the community wealth building, yeah, we're aware, I think, very much of the makeup of this council about the inequalities in right throughout the city, and some areas very much found to be in unequal to others. And I think this is a start, this particular programme. In terms of congestion charges that I believe ultimately will be introduced, and I'll be keeping a watch from outside the chamber to ensure that I'd be interested to see how it is going to be addressed in terms of recommendations from the new council. But Cathy, thank you very much for all the work you've done in terms of reminding the members of all the different items that were on the agenda, some of them more important than others, and some of them I'd nearly forgotten about, but it's no harm to be reminded about the amount of work we've done. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paddy. Councillor Conlon.
Thanks, Chair. At the start of the council term, I was kind of designated to go on to the planning SPC, which I did, but I come on to this SPC just for my own knowledge, really, and information, because I'm not great when it comes to figures, you know, looking through agendas, and I realise it is really important. But I have to say that the diligence of yourself, Cathy, and the rest of the team there in following up some of the items is just second to none, I don't think. I've been on a few SPCs at this stage, and I have to say the follow-up has been amazing. And I got an absolute shock after the community wealth building was mooted first a few years ago, and the following SPC, the report that was there, I couldn't believe it. I was probably said a couple of things, but I was more or less speechless. But just to thank yourself and the team for the work over the last few years. And just as Paddy says, it's nice to see the amount of stuff that was covered there and the work that has been done, because most of it I had nearly forgot about. But again, just thanks to yourself and the team. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Councillor Lacey.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll miss, if I'm lucky enough to be back, I'll miss my skirmishes with Councillor McCartan, perhaps more than most. Myself and Paddy go back a long way, and sometimes we agree and sometimes we don't, but I've always enjoyed the engagement. I want to join everybody else in thanking Cathy, you and your staff, and as Anthony Connan said, the follow-up was always great at this SPC. It's not always the case in every SPC, but always was on this one. You came back to us really regularly. Seamus, you for chairing us, for the work that you've done, and maybe in particular the external members who have given up your time. You're not elected representatives. You don't have to do it, and just to say thank you. I suppose to end, though, on a political point, because we are a political chamber, I mean, to make the glib statement that the city doesn't benefit from the LPT as if that's in some sort of vacuum, it would be unfair to the people who pay the 68 million. We don't benefit from the LPT because government steals that money. And I deliberately used that word. I know Councillor McCartan doesn't like me using it. I believe government does steal the LPT. Knocking on doors, one of the questions that people ask you, and I support the LPT, I support increasing it, I think it's at a too low level, but one of the questions that people ask, and rightly ask, is what happens our LPT? Why aren't the roads being done? Why isn't this being done? We pay our LPT. And the answer is straightforward. Despite what Minister O'Donoghue and Minister McGrath say, they give us 100% of it, but then they whip off, you know, 60-odd million from our overall grant. So the government does steal the LPT from the people of Dublin, and I think we should say that. But one of the things that has also worried me over the last number of years is the increasing tendency of government to announce once-off projects and initiatives whereby every county gets a certain amount of money. But every county gets the same money. And like, I don't want to single out a county, but a very small county getting 100,000 or a million is great for them. But in Dublin City, when we get that same amount of money, it really pales into sometimes non-use. I remember one grant we got on the City of Dublin Youth Service Board, we actually had to spend more money advertising the scheme because the minister laid down the way in which the scheme was to be operated than we got on it. So this, you know, once-off, you know, treating every county fairly, giving them all the same amount of money, is a further example of where the system discriminates against Dublin. And I hope that the next SPC and the next council begins to address some of the really key issues facing Dublin, the finances of Dublin, the administration of Dublin, rather than, to be frank, some of the fairly pointless debates that we've had at City Council meeting about things well outside our brief or responsibility and on which we can have no influence. I think we should start to try and influence what happens in Dublin rather than certain other places. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dermot. Councillor Callaghan.
Thanks. I just want to thank everybody involved in this, and particularly Cathy and her team. When I came on this, I thought, I know a bit about finance, I'm good at maths and all of that, but the level of complexity in the financial aspect of running Dublin City Council is absolutely overwhelming, certainly from my point of view, and it takes me a long time to actually get my head around what's going on. And that's where I really want to thank Cathy and her team for managing that and managing it in such a responsible way. Very often it's a case of robbing from Peter to pay Paul or making very tough decisions. But I have the highest respect for you all for doing it. I suppose it is worthwhile also saying that in terms of what we can do in local government, it is really important to be well financed, and we do need to increase the finances wherever it comes from, whether it's from government, from an increase in property tax, or a number of different ways of doing that, the hotels tax, etc. The number of times people have come up to me as a councillor and said, I've just come home from, you know, Amsterdam or Denmark or, you know, Norway, and the quality of what's going on in their local area is so much higher. And I just think that we need to raise our standard and realise that what's happening outside your door and what's happening when you go to the local supermarket, that's what life is about. And if you can improve the quality of life at a local level, it makes such a difference. And I just particularly want to mention, you know, areas of social deprivation require more money. You know, they require more cleaning, more waste management, more investment in lots of different areas, particularly community projects. That's just the way it is, to help bring people out of that, you know, repeating generational pattern. And I think it's really important that going forward, we continue and increase the way we actually give financial support to those areas. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Mary. Cathy, there's a couple of questions here. Do you want to come back on them?
Sorry, Chair. The question I thought was from Councillor McCartan around the position on the legislation and the deduction from rent. And the last rate of correspondence, I can get you the one out, was really saying there wasn't much intention to do it about the national differential schemes. And I think we wrote and said, well, can you tell us how those two things are connected? Because that was the discussion, we weren't too sure. But we didn't really get that addressed. So it hasn't pushed on. And I think it is something to keep at, because I would think when you think back to the presentation at the previous meeting, I can't see how it wouldn't help all of that process if it was more streamlined and certain and all of that. What's another question? I don't think there's any other questions. If I'm wrong, would you shout?
That's it. Okay, thanks very much. Okay, members, I think that's it. It's our final meeting, so it's the final item. So I just want to, I want to thank all members for their contribution over the last 5 years, both council members and external members. It's always good to get the views from external members with a different point of view, maybe from some of the councillors, both those present online in the chamber and those not today. There's a few people not present today have made valuable contributions as well, just to thank them. I want to thank all the staff that work behind the scenes, particularly over this term. It's been unprecedented for all of us, and when we were during COVID and particularly when we were moving into hybrid meetings, it was very difficult for us all to adapt. So I just want to thank all the staff who've been a huge help to me and the chair, putting together agendas, presentations, getting webcasts, and all the work they've done. And it really has made how this meeting operates much, much smoother. As has been said, I particularly want to thank Cathy. A lot of the stuff you saw on the last slide has been driven by Cathy and our team. And a lot of those schemes wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the determination. I particularly want to mention the community wealth building. As has been said, that was a scheme that it was an idea that came and Cathy really pushed it. I know Cathy would say there was others involved, but she was the real force behind that. And that now and will continue for a long, long time to make a real difference in the city. So I want to thank all the people involved in the SPC for all your contributions and all the continued work, and wish whoever is back here after June all the very best. Gramila Magwith.
And thanks to you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Hope to see you soon, Chair.
Strong, Dr. Matt.